Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
I'm Dylan Tyer, and this is Believe in Ohio State. Welcome to another edition of Believe in Ohio State. Hope everybody had an excellent past week and is ready to talk some Ohio State football, as we're going to get right into it right now. We're going to go around the Oval, bring you the latest news for former Buckeyes, current Buckeyes, and much more. And we got to start off in the National Football League is a couple of releases in the NFL, so maybe some bad news for former Buckeyes. But first and foremost, JT Barrett, former Ohio State quarterback, was released by the Pittsburgh Steelers. His former teammate, tight end Jeff Heirman, was released by the Denver Broncos. And then some COVID-19 NFL news. Bengals tackle Isaiah Prince, of course, another former Ohio State Buckeye, has opted out of the 2020 National Football League season. So Isaiah Prince will not be playing for the Bengals next year because of COVID-19. A couple more notes from the National Football League. Six Buckeyes last week were named to the NFL Network's top 100 list. The highest rated Buckeye came in at number 5. That was Michael Thomas. At number 17, it was Nick Bosa. Ezekiel Elliott checked in at number 24. 10 spots after him at number 34, it was Los Angeles Chargers defensive end and Nick's brother Joey Bosa, who of course recently signed a 5-year, $135 million extension with the Chargers. His $102 million guaranteed is a brand new NFL record for a defensive player, so congratulations to Joey. Two more Buckeyes on that top 100 list for the NFL Network. Checking in at number 76, Saints cornerback Marshawn Lattimore, and at number 84, Cameron Hayward, Steelers defensive end. News on campus yesterday, some big news on campus, I should say, yesterday. Ohio State named its team captains. Offensive linemen Wyatt Davis and Josh Myers will be captains, as will cornerback Sean Wade. Two linebackers were named captains, Justin Hilliard along with Tuff Borland, who is now a 3-time captain for Ohio State, just the second Buckeye to ever do that. The other one, of course, was JT Barrett. Jonathan Cooper, defensive end, also named team captain. And, of course, Justin Fields, the quarterback for the Buckeyes, was named one of their team captains yesterday. Moving over to the SEC, they held a video conference with players and league officials to better understand the players' concerns going into the 2020 season, whether it's about COVID-19, racial injustice, being paid or not. But a day later, a day after they held that meeting, the SEC announced its plan to play a 10-game conference-only schedule starting on Saturday, September 26. So some big news there as we move over to the Pac-12 conference. Pac-12 players created a unity movement a couple of days ago with demands for health and safety, racial injustice, and economic equality that must be met, Otherwise, they say they're going to boycott the 2020 football season. So a lot to unpack there when it comes to the SEC and the Pac-12 and what that might mean for the Big Ten and Ohio State this season. So I invited on Brendan Gulick, who's the publisher and beat reporter for Buckeyes Now, which is Sports Illustrated's dedicated Ohio State site, to kind of break things down with me, talk about it a little bit more. So without further ado, here he is, Brendan Gulick. Obviously, the situation is evolving every day. You don't know what could happen tomorrow. You don't know what could happen the next day. We don't know what could happen in a month. But as it stands right now, looks like we're moving in a positive direction towards having college football in 2020. But there's some stuff popping up with a coalition in the Pac-12. So can you tell me a little bit about what's going on in the Pac-12 and whether or not that threatens the potential college football season?
Yeah, I think it's probably not unforeseen what the Pac-12 came up with here. And frankly, I think they swung pretty big, given where we are right now as a sports culture. I think they asked for the moon, and we'll see if they get any of it. But at the moment, you know, the players haven't had quite the same voice that perhaps maybe the players have had in some other leagues. And I think a lot of the college athletes, in combination with everything that's going on right now, the name, image, and likeness, you know, legislation starting to come to the forefront of conversations, the social unrest, just this whole culture, I think right now is sort of giving a voice to collegiate student athletes who feel that they should be paid. They're taking this opportunity and trying to run with it. And I certainly don't blame them for trying to capitalize on the leverage that they have. I have a really hard time believing that all of their quote-unquote demands are going to be met, but that doesn't mean they can't make some progress in you know the battle that they're fighting here. So I'll be really interested to see where the middle ground is, because I don't think the NCAA is going to give them nothing, but the NCAA probably looks at this and says, gee, we've already said that your scholarships are guaranteed if you back out and it's voluntary this season, like you don't need to play. So you know, that was, it felt to me like when I read through their list of demands, that was one of the staples that they had. And it sort of felt like that had already been addressed. I'm really interested to see where it lands, Dylan, because I think they asked for an awful lot, knowing they probably wouldn't get it all, but they'd like to see what kind of momentum they can create. And, you know, from their perspective, whatever win they can get, whatever the Pac-12 or the NCAA would quote unquote give to them might make them feel like, okay, we're really starting to make some legitimate actual progress here. The name, image, and likeness stuff is going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know what the circumstances are, but I think the NCAA as a, you know, overarching organization knows the change is coming, and they're trying like crazy to make sure they don't have 50 states with 50 different sets of rules. They'd like to have one set of rules. Whether or not the federal government's going to give them that kind of autonomy, I think, is still up in the air. But this is going to be a really interesting couple of months here to see what happens with college sports if they play in the fall, and you know what kind of potential unionizing effort the Pac-12 might have initiated here.
With that list of demands that you're talking about from these players in the Pac-12, I've heard a little bit about the possibility of these guys boycotting the season if their demands are not met. Do you think that's real? I mean, it seems to me like there's too much for the players to lose if they do that. Like you said, you know, they can opt not to play and still have their scholarships, but what's the situation if there were a boycott?
Yeah, since you're asking my opinion, I'm going to call their bluff. I think there might be some players that would boycott the season. I think there are a lot of players that will give in to peer pressure and not boycott the season. I have a hard time seeing that. I know that, you know, from what I've read and from who I've talked to, not everybody in the entire conference is on board with it, but there is certainly a significant number. I mean, we're talking about several hundred players across the entire Pac-12 that feel this way. So it's a good chunk. I don't know if it's enough to make any one team in particular say, hey, look, we're not playing this year because we can't field the team. But I just have a hunch that that's not going to come to fruition. I think the Pac-12 is going to have a football season, and, you know, whether they're upperclassmen or underclassmen, whether it's, you know, super notable guys that could be first round draft picks or guys at the end of the bench that are trying to make a statement and stand up for what they believe in. I would be very hard pressed to believe, at least at this stage of the game, I'd be really hard pressed to believe that the Pac-12 would not be able to field teams this year and have a season.
I want to transition things now to the SEC, because I heard kind of a ridiculous argument. I'll put it this way, because right now, the way the season looks, the SEC set to begin conference only play, 10 game schedule on September 26th. And I read that some of the, I'll put it, smaller programs in the SEC are upset at this because they lose out on program building games, games against teams like Middle Tennessee, a game where you're going to beat up on other opponents. So first of all, give me your opinion on that, because like I said, I think it's frankly a little bit ridiculous. And after that, do you think there's still a possibility that we could see some out of conference football games this season, or is it just going to be conference only?
I think the games against the FCS opponents are a massive point of contention right now. As it pertains to the SEC, I've always thought it was a little strange they play those games late in the year. They certainly play some early, but it seems like, you know, Alabama will play UAB in like week nine. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, I'm cool with them doing that weeks 1, 2, and 3, but it makes you kind of scratch your head as the season goes along. But most other conferences will play those games early enough in the season. And I think that is a huge point of conversation here early in the year of, you know, who's responsible for those games. Like, for example, right now we live in Big Ten country. The Big Ten made a ruling that they're not going to play non-conference football games, but you'll notice that a lot of the mid-major schools have not come out and said, yeah, we're not playing non-conference football games either. Because in my opinion, if they go to court and they've already said that, then they lose all their leverage, right? So even if, for example, as it pertains to Ohio State, even if Buffalo knows in their heart there's no way they're going to play Ohio State in week 3 and they never would do it, they're not going to publicly admit to that because they still might be able to collect that $1.8 million. That hasn't been settled yet. Or, you know, the Bowling Greens of the world or whoever. I mean, I think that is a really interesting storyline to follow here the next couple of months, because some of these smaller schools, man, they are hemorrhaging cash right now and trying to figure out how to stay afloat. Do I think we're going to have non-conference football games of any kind this year? I think there's going to be a small effort to play some non-league games. I read a report tonight out of the Big 12, although I certainly haven't sourced this myself, but I read a report out of the Big 12 that they are going to approve a schedule for 9 conference games and 1 non-conference game. I know the ACC had come out and said, hey, we'll play, you know, 10 league games and approve 1 non-league game so we can sort of keep some of these traditional rivalries together. Like Clemson and South Carolina, for example, supposed to play this year. And then the next day, the SEC comes out and says, actually, we're not going to do that. We're just going to play in the league. And that's part of the challenge right now, Dylan. You got everybody trying to do their own thing and not point fingers at each other. But there's some disconnect right now. There's definitely some differing opinions. And from what I've heard, as it pertains to the Big Ten, they don't really care what other conferences are going to do. The Big Ten is looking at this and saying, okay, we're going to make the decision we think is best for us as a league, and whatever everybody else does is their own business. I think this is just such a landmark year for college athletics, where we're going to see a lot of discord all across the landscape. And I hope it doesn't cause irreversible damage somewhere along the way.
Well, with that discord in mind, it has me thinking, how are we going to solve championships this season? There's not going to be a way to come together and play bowl games, is there? Or what about a national championship? What are the plans for that, if there are any right now?
So here's the one big thing as it pertains to college sports national championships that a lot of fans don't realize. They just sort of group this together mentally, but there is a very important distinction here. When the NCAA says that we are going to quote-unquote cancel championship events, for example, the Board of Governors meets tomorrow and they might cancel fall sports championships. Legally, that cannot include Division I college football, because there is no such thing as the NCAA football championship. That literally does not exist. At FCS, at Division II, at Division III, the smaller schools, yes, that exists. There's a bracketed tournament to determine a champion. The college football playoff is an entirely separate entity. It's not owned and operated by the NCAA. It's owned by the conferences and by the schools. The NCAA does not have the authority to cancel that. So they could make college football, as most fans like to follow it, they could make it look bad if they played in the fall, because they might have canceled the field hockey championship tournament and the volleyball and the soccer tournaments, but they literally cannot cancel the football championship. So I think right now the conversation for the NCAA is, okay, look, there's a lot of D2 and D3 leagues around the country that have already kind of thrown in the towel and said, we're either not having kids on campus, or as a conference, we don't think it's appropriate to play this year. And so maybe it's easy to cancel the Division III field hockey championship or the Division II soccer tournament. But at Division I, I think they're going to give this as much leash as they can. I wouldn't be surprised if the Division I decision doesn't come down tomorrow. They might delay it again. But know that if the NCAA comes out and says, we've canceled fall sports championships, take a deep breath, because that literally cannot apply legally to Division I major college football. Will we have a college football playoff this year? That's up to the conferences. It's up to the SEC, the ACC, Big 12, Pac-12, Big 10. Do they want to go through with that? Do they want to actually have a season? They can still play a regular season even if they decide they don't want to have a tournament, but somewhere along the way you wonder, what's the point then? My gut all along has told me that there is too much money tied up into college football. The Power Five schools would lose more than $4 billion if they don't play college football this year. Mm. And until someone tells me otherwise that there is not going to be college football, I'm inclined to believe that there will be in some capacity. I just don't know what that looks like yet. Wouldn't surprise me if there are empty stadiums. Certainly wouldn't surprise me if different teams play different numbers of games. I just have a really hard time envisioning, with all of the financial hardship that schools are already going through after missing out on March Madness and in spring sports, I have a really hard time seeing there not being football, but maybe I'm just naive about it. Who knows?
Well, the last thing I'll ask you here then, because I was going to ask you, do you think this season can happen? Is it viable? But I guess I'll ask you this, and it's a completely opinion question. Just tell me what you think. Can this season, or is this season ethical? Because in the Big Ten, for example, a school like Minnesota, they're doing online classes where other schools might be coming back. So is it ethical for a school that has online courses to, I know you can opt out, but in a sense, be kind of pressuring the football players to be on campus, putting themselves at risk while their classmates are able to stay at home?
That is a loaded question. boy, I have always kind of felt like if kids can't be on campus, if you are not paying college athletes, it would be pretty hard to justify having college sports for amateur athletes if the rest of the student body isn't around. I don't know if that's what they're going to decide. Admittedly, I have spent enough time around Division I college athletics that I think D1 athletes are extremely well cared for, way beyond what most people understand and know. And while they might not be getting a paycheck in their pocket, the value of what they're given from a nutrition and not just education in the classroom, but care for the whole person, that entire package is worth a boatload of money to a school. And I mean, just if the gear that a lot of the Division I kids get and the access to things that they get that other kids don't, there is a serious value to that schools invest in. And so I think the NCAA model has fought the idea of paying student athletes for a really long time. They've never had to deal with something as serious as, hey, we're asking you to put your potential health at risk by playing during a pandemic. And everything is about the, you know, overall health and well-being of the student athlete. And that's how it should be. But every school is going to have a different level of risk appetite. And I think it's going to be really interesting because, boy, I'm telling you, there are some schools that are infuriated that their students are not going to be on campus this fall. And there are some schools whose students are probably going to be on campus this fall that are absolutely enraged that they will be. There is such a differing of opinion here, and I have a hard time seeing where there's going to be any, like, peace out of this. I suppose I can certainly understand where, you know, if someone is saying, hey, I'm not paying you for your quote-unquote services, collegiate student athlete, but, you know, they live the lifestyle of someone who is essentially a professional athlete, I can see where that could cause some serious tension. I hate to just, like, tell the middle line on you, but to be honest with you, I'm not sure where I stand on it. I'm still kind of developing that opinion. I'm trying to listen to both sides and figure out where my heart is on it, but is it ethical? Man, that's a really tough question. I think the fact that there is a volunteer part of this that, you know, the student athlete is allowed to opt out and is going to be guaranteed their education, I think that certainly helps those who wanted to, you know, to go on.
Well, I lied. That's not going to be the last thing I ask you. Because of your answer there, do you see more coalitions like we're seeing in the Pac-12 popping up, maybe not just in conferences, but at schools themselves? Because with everything that you said, it got me thinking, and there's two sides to every story here, but I think the athletes have the administrators in a tough spot right now where they can make more demands and maybe can push for a decision on whether or not they're going to be compensated in some way to guarantee a season this year. So do you see that happening at all, or are we just too close to the start date of a season that can even happen?
I hope the answer to your question is that there's not more coalitions, plural, that pop up.
Yeah.
I hope that they don't diversify so much that they have a hard time gaining any real traction. We've had a couple of different instances where, you know, for instance, I think it was at Northwestern, somebody, you know, kind of started to try to formalize some sort of NCAA football players union. I could see where what's going on in the Pac-12 right now might gain some traction beyond the Pac-12 and spread to schools, you know, in other Power Five conferences where maybe they could get one larger coalition. But if they branch off and if the Pac-12 wants to do one thing and the SEC wants to do another thing and the Big Ten another thing, I'm not sure if that's healthy for college sports. But I think you're probably dead on with this, man. They've got administrators in a tough spot. They've probably got as much leverage as a student athlete as they've ever had. And, you know, for those who want change, they should act on it. And this is their chance to do so.
Well, Brendan, I really appreciate you joining me here. This was a great conversation. I learned a lot. This was really interesting. It got me thinking, and now it's got me kind of wanting to really do more reading into more of the legal aspects of everything that's going on right now.
You bet, man. Glad to join you, and hope to do it again soon.
All right. Hopefully we'll have you back here and be able to actually talk some Buckeye football.
Would love that.
So thanks again to Brendan Gulick, of course, the publisher and beat reporter for Ohio State on Buckeyes Now, Sports Illustrated's dedicated Ohio State site. Really enjoyed that conversation with Brendan, just kind of getting to understand what's going on beneath the surface of everything that we're hearing. Great to hear some of the legal side of things from Brendan, and I'd love to have him back when we can actually start to talk some football, because he has great insight on the Ohio State football program. And as you heard, he's just a fun guy to talk to. He's got good things to say. So that's going to do it for this week of Believe in Ohio State. I thank you for being with me as always. Hopefully next week we can start to talk some Ohio State scheduling, some potential opponents, and how this team is going to look going into the 2020 college football season. So one more time, thanks again to Brendan Gulick. Thank you for joining me, and I'll see you next week on Believe in Ohio State.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.